Let's do it.
All right. Well, welcome everybody to the Quill and Query podcast. This is episode 4, where we talk all things reading, writing, and publishing. I am Brandon Hall, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-host, Ash. I know I just asked you, but since this is where I start the recording, how are you doing today?
I'm doing really well. For those who don't know me, I am A.M. Acock, with my author name, but everyone just calls me Ash. And I am doing just fine for a Tuesday. It is beautiful, thankfully, outside. Got the windows open, so if you hear any dogs or birds, that's why, but I can't resist the open air, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I wish I could open my windows right now, but it would probably be too loud.
I meant to follow up about last week when you said that you had some power washers outside your house.
Yes, thankfully no more water came into the building.
Okay, good.
We're dry over here, mostly.
That's good.
I'll start off by saying we don't really have a lot of news topics to go over this week. That was a shared struggle between us. Very slow news week, which is fine, you know. At least there's nothing bad happening that we need to talk about. So
that is true.
But that doesn't mean we don't have anything fun to talk about. We still have some interesting writing topics. Maybe for once we'll have some differing opinions on some things. I purposely kind of threw some of those topics in there, if you noticed.
I did.
I thought that would be fun. Nice way to deal with the slow news week. But before we get into all those fun topics, what are you reading this week?
So I think I might have mentioned it last week. I'm reading Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow for book club, and I didn't think I was going to like it. A quick synopsis, it follows two gaming programmers who become best friends as children, drift apart, and then find themselves together again in their highs and lows of their success in the gaming industry. And it's really well done. It's like a multi-point of view book. It's got a lot of prose, and it's very character-driven, which is not usually the type of book that I normally gravitate towards. I'm very plot heavy. I enjoy like a lot of world building, a lot of external drama, but this is done super, super well. And it's, I think it won a couple awards or was nominated last year on Goodreads for like best fiction, whatever. Anyway, very good for those who have read it. I'm sure you would agree with me. For those who haven't, would definitely recommend, especially for a good, like outside your genre. Yeah, that's what I'm reading. I'm also, I kind of paused my other works in progress books, and I'm going to pick up Stolen Focus by Johan Hari. I don't know if you've ever read that.
Ooh, okay, no, I haven't read that.
It's essentially how currently our focus has pretty much diminished as a society and how we can get that back. I've been finding myself as we are on this app doing this, very distracted recently by TikTok and social media.
Yeah.
And it's a really digestible, easy read to kind of get you feeling a little pumped to put the phone away. So I'm going to reread that. I really liked it. So it's my yearly rotation feel motivated.
That actually sounds like a good read. I might have to add that one to my list.
You should. It's definitely a good one.
I definitely suffer from meaning to do a lot of things and then I end up doom scrolling. So
yeah, same. Well, what are you reading?
I'm still reading the same things as before.
essentially,
right. I'm kind of like hopping back and forth. I'm going through a really heavy mood reading phase right now, so
okay.
I'm mostly switching between The Body Keeps the Score, the nonfiction book I was reading, and then the second book of the First Law trilogy, just depending on where my mood is. Very tempted to throw more books into that mix, but I am resisting the urge to do that because I will never finish anything if I do that.
Yeah.
So I will finish these two, and then hopefully in the next couple weeks or so, I'll have a new book to say for this segment.
Yeah, like a reward, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I finished my others, so now I can start anew.
Yeah. It's always, do you get that post-book depression, though, where, like, you don't, I don't know, maybe it's, I know some people get, like, that with just entertainment in general, but
yeah,
it's very prevalent for me for like movies, video games, books.
Oh yeah,
I always hit a slump right after I finish something.
Yeah, if I really love it, especially if it's a series that has ended and I know that it's just not going to ever be a thing again that I look forward to, obviously rereads. But the one person recently who kind of eased that Suffering was V.E. Schwab. She's like starting a second trilogy
Oh,
after
okay.
her first trilogy, the Gathering of Shadows, or the can't remember the name. I'm blanking. Long day. Apologies in advance for any hiccups of speech today. Yeah, so she did. She's doing like a follow up with the same characters and then some new characters thrown in. So it's like, oh my God, yes, thank you. Like
Yeah.
I was so bereft years ago finishing it. So yeah, I completely understand.
Very cool. It's always
It's the
nice.
one downside to reading.
Yeah. It's always nice when they come back with something though, like that.
Super fun. All right.
Well, that covers our current reads. pretty much the same as last time, but more. It's weird. It's such a weird segment because I'm not the kind of person who will typically finish a book in a week. Not anymore, anyway, unless I really enjoy it. So I feel weird sometimes when I'm like, yeah, it's still the same book as last week, but.
I know, me too. Maybe we should I mean I do like it, especially we can keep that there maybe, and like maybe we have like books that we've put on our TBR, like
Yeah.
adding new books to our TBR and do that instead of just being like
Yeah.
the same book as it has been for the last month.
Yeah, I think we could definitely spice it up. And if anyone has any suggestions, please share them. But I think that's a good start.
We'll switch it up.
But yeah, that's our current reads. Like I said, there's not a whole lot of industry news to go over, but you somehow found two stories for us. I don't know how. I swear I spent
I did.
like an hour or more last night and then today looking for stories, and it was just like
Okay.
there was nothing. But I will let you
In
share the
your
story.
defense, yes, in your defense, I do research for a living, so I know I feel like I can dig stuff up. This actually happened in the last 24 hours, I guess.
Oh, wow, okay.
But apparently there is an independent bookshop called Backstory, and they just launched a new literary magazine of the same name, Backstory. And apparently the aim is to target younger female audiences, which is really cool. So the inaugural edition is being published next week, I think. It'll happen twice a year. From what I saw, it's a lot of like crime slash fiction female writers right now. But the quote that I pulled from this article that I actually was like, oh, this sounds super fun, and anyone who wants to maybe submit in the future, the quote from the founder, whose name I am forgetting, let me see, just to give props where props are due. Pardon. His last name is Rowley. What is his first name? Journalist Tom Rowley. Okay, that is his name. So Tom Rowley was quoted, "I'm very excited to launch Backstory, a new kind of books magazine," he said. "As a reader, I sometimes find literary magazines quite heavy and feel a bit intimidated by page after page of highbrow reviews. Our magazine is a lighthearted, playful art alternative. It isn't about our own bookshop, but is a celebration of books and bookshops of all kinds." So, not indie related, but kind of at the same time. Apparently, a lot of people are super excited about this. And if you're one of those people who like to submit to literary magazines, especially if you're a woman, sounds like a good place to start.
Yeah, that's really cool. I didn't know anything about Backstory, and I know I'm not the target audience, but I will still be checking it out. And hopefully, I hope it's a nice safe space for younger female audiences, and that it gives them a platform. Always,
Definitely.
always
It's always
good
a
to see
bonus.
that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
And like I said, with the indie releases, we'll be picking that segment back up in May because we burned through all the April books. So if you are curious about the April indie slash self-publishing book releases, I believe it's in episode 2 of the podcast. So go back and watch that one. It should be in the first like 20 minutes or so. And there's some good ones in there. Definitely some that
Perfect.
are going to be on my TBR for a while, but I will get to them.
Hey, eventually, yep.
All right, well, I guess we can move into the indie publishing slash book topics we have. Again, slow news week, so this section is
Definitely.
going to be a little different than usual, but looks like at the top we got your other news story that you found. So do you want to go ahead and share that one as well?
So I don't know if any of you have tried or heard of lulu.com. It's essentially just another kind of resource that I shared last week where it helps you get your book published. So they handle, it's kind of like a hybrid publishing concept of like you give them everything and then they help you, but you pay up front. But they have an offshoot of that called Tilt Publishing, and it's aimed at content entrepreneurs, including book publishers, independent book publishers or self-publishers. But it also, they'll help you print ebook or create ebooks. They also do audiobook publishing, which is kind of cool. I think it's like the first I've seen really just like push that, help you with podcasting as well. So it seems like they've got a lot of great offerings, and even though it's relatively new from their website, it seems like they were pretty straightforward and upfront with cost, which is usually just kind of this taboo subject. But they have different packages. So yeah, it just seemed like a pretty cool piece of news coming from a website that already was kind of established. Apparently it's like one of the best well-known lulu.com for like publishing content info. So yeah, that's all I had. Super low-key week in the indie self-publishing space.
Yeah, for sure. But that's nice to see. I haven't heard of lulu.com before, but I will be checking them out. Anything that helps me understand more about the publishing industry, especially the audiobook side of things, I feel like can be very convoluted and confusing sometimes. I know about like ACX and that's about it. So I'll definitely be checking them out and probably closer as I get closer to actually releasing something,
But one day, soon, one day soon,
One day
when you
soon.
are going to do that, we
Soon.
have lots of options.
Yes.
And that's it.
That is it. I did put, I don't know if you had a chance to see them, but I did put some kind of just broader topics we could talk about if you want to take up some more time in this indie publishing and book discussion space. But I think we could try to maybe open this segment up more. You and I talked about it a little bit already, but just for everyone who's listening, open it up more to like broader topics and themes as opposed to tying everything into a news story. Because I've noticed with each episode, it's harder for us to find news stories, even though you are excellent at research and finding them when I can't. I think it'll just keep this section kind of fun and interesting. And I'll give make sure we don't run out of stuff to talk about because that's kind of my worry with the weekly format. I don't want us to just run out of topics one day and just kind of here's a 15-minute episode because there's nothing to talk about. But yeah.
Agreed.
So I guess I'll do you sorry, I'm stumbling off my words here. Do you have
That's okay.
a topic from this list that you want to dive into first, because I put a few here, but I didn't really get your, I should have gotten your input before we went live, but
No. I read it and I was like, oh, these are great. Are there any that you in particular wanted to talk about? I feel like these are great ideas. So did you have anything that came to mind as you were writing them down?
No, I was really just thinking about like how can we have a conversation about indie publishing without tying it to like recent news stories, but I guess we could start maybe with this might be a good one to start with tips and strategies for new writers joining book talk and social media in general, because I think that could be a little bit daunting for people, and I think you and I have decent sized followings that we amassed pretty quickly. I wouldn't consider myself like internet famous by any means for sure, but yeah, no, it's difficult to kind of give advice on this too because I feel like it's so individual. But I guess I'm gonna pose the question to you, and if you want, you can throw it back to me if you need more time, if you need more time to think on it. But how did you get started on book talk, and I guess what do you take away from that experience that you would want to share with new authors who are coming onto this space to share their writing and have no idea how to get started.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think so. When I first joined TikTok, it was literally right at the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. I had not even really like heard of it that much beforehand. It had obviously existed, but
Yeah.
I remember making fun of like Musical.ly, which is what obviously TikTok was before it became TikTok.
Yeah.
But with 2020, with a lack of entertainment available to do outside, I obviously downloaded the app and kind of just got started generically. And then I very quickly stumbled across a few people talking about Sarah J. Maas mostly. Like it hadn't really kind of kicked off yet.
Okay.
But there were like a few other authors that people were talking about in like the romance fantasy space that by a whim I saw pop up on my feed. And then that's kind of how I started interacting more with BookTok itself back in the day, 4 years ago. And in 4 years, I've seen BookTok obviously just explode. I think I posted my first TikTok like summer of that year. And it was essentially reviewing From Blood and Ash by Jennifer Armentrout. I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that was like a very simple kind of thing that I did and didn't get many likes, but I enjoyed the fact that I could just talk about what I really loved talking about already
Yeah.
to people that might see it. So I kind of just started doing it. I wasn't consistent. I still am not. And I think that's my number one biggest piece of advice to anyone who does want to start marketing themselves as a book reviewer or an author, is
Yeah.
that unfortunately consistency is really key coming from somebody, as I said, who is not. It can be daunting. It can be scary what hashtags to use, what not to use. Interacting is really important. If you interact with your peers that are also reviewing or doing the same type of content, that really helps with your own engagement. And I'd also say, as fun as it is to have hands at a lot of buckets, it's nice to have just like one thing that you do. I've posted a few things about my own writing on here, but it doesn't really get as much traction as just like my general book reviews or discussing book talk drama, which always gets a lot as well. So
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of like at the beginning, pick exactly what you want to do and just be consistent. So that's what I would, that would be my best advice. And don't get caught up in it. It's an app. No one actually cares at the end of the day,
Yeah.
truly, like genuinely. I mean, I posted a video today kind of ranting on someone else's thing because I think it's important and part of a broader discourse. But at the end of the day, like no one actually cares what I have to think. You know,
Yeah.
I can say all I want to say and now I'm just a drop in the bucket. So anyway. What about you? What's your feedback and advice? When did you get on TikTok?
Yeah, so I guess I have two different experiences. Like I started first, I was very against starting TikTok at all, even like watching it or using it. I just my partner in a previous relationship kept pushing me to use it, and I was like, I really don't care. But eventually I gave in because they kept wanting to send me videos, and so it was like, okay, fine, I'll download it just to watch the stuff you're sending me. And then obviously it's there on my phone, so I started using it. And a lot of the stuff that I got exposed to was early BookTok stuff. Definitely noticed that there was a lot of spice focus in the BookTok community, but I did kind of find my own little corner in the fantasy section. And not that I'm against spice, by the way, if that's just not what I generally
Here
read.
we go, Brandon. No, just
No, I'm
kidding.
not. No, but I've seen you reply to some of those, and I like your takes on those. But no, I'm not one of those, don't worry. But yeah, last year, I don't want to go into detail, but I ended up in the hospital after a serious accident, and so that just caused me to reconsider a lot of things. One of them was, I have always wanted to write, and I never have, and I've never shared my writing or anything with anyone, really. And so when I left the hospital, I got back into writing, and the first place I went to kind of share that with the world was TikTok, just because it's where I knew it was easy to get exposure. It's where I knew there was a big book community. And so that's just where I went. And I really just started, and it's pretty much most of what I still post is just stupid book memes most of the time. And they get good views most of the time. But yeah, I guess that would be Like, if you wanted to know what my content is, that's the bulk of it is just dumb book CapCut memes. But I try to post other stuff once in a while, so it's not all that. But no, I think a lot of the advice you gave is really good. I started out too, kind of, I guess maybe too consistent. Like, I was really focused on I need to do 3 videos a day, and I did that for so long that I burned out. So I would say be consistent, but also be careful, because that ended up in me having a really long content drought, and it kind of stalled my follower count and things like that. Whereas if I think I stepped back a little bit and worked on, I don't know, maybe quality over quantity or something like that, and just kind of didn't focus so much on the grind, that I could have kept it up for longer as opposed to burning out like I did. But yeah, unfortunately, when it comes to marketing anything and social media presence, consistency is key, like you said.
No, that's great. Counter advice though about the making sure you don't burn out and being balanced. You know, it is, you want to make sure you are getting, if you want to, I guess that's also a part of the conversation too. What are your goals? You know, when you come on TikTok for the first time, is it just to collect a bunch of funny videos? Yeah, okay, cool. Then like no worries. But if your goals are to be like someone with a big following, the Google abounds with advice on how to do that. But I also want to back what you're saying too, is that like, yeah, there is a downside to that. You can run out of content. You can then just start repeating content, which makes people bored. So be smart about it, be strategic, and don't let it dictate your life. Like, if you're just doing this for fun on the side, make sure it still stays for fun, and don't get bogged down.
I think what you said about goals is really important too, because like right now, obviously, I don't have a book out. So when I'm marketing, it's I'm selling myself and the stories I want to tell, but I'm not trying to direct people to buy something, at least not yet. Hi, Mandy.
Hi.
But so naturally, as I get closer to that, my content is going to be different. Because I'll be trying to drive book sales. Obviously, I'm gonna want people to enjoy it, but you know, it's a business too. But right now, I'm just trying to sell people on who I am and the stories I want to tell, and so that just comes with memes, and like little things about my story. Just trying to share like my sense of humor, the tone that I'm going for. So yeah, I think
Like
goal.
creating the foundation. Like, here's who I am. And then when it gets time, you know, to do that, here's where it is. And I'll say on the end of that too, like, especially if you have like a video that goes semi-viral, like the one that I posted about a month ago still continues to get likes and comments. And I'm like, oh my God, how do people who have millions of followers do this every day? Because it just, it'll be stale and then it'll get a bunch. And so with that too, it's like, just because you have the number of followers that you might have, not every video is going to get the equitable amount of follows. So when you start to share your work, or you start to share what you've written, instead of like in our example, book memes or book discourse or book reviews, they're not, it's not going to do the same. Just isn't. That's just not how the app works. So if people keep that in mind too, I feel like a lot of people get discouraged or disappointed when they start to advertise their book or their work and it's getting 10 likes instead of the 300 to 400 they're used to. And that's just, you have to almost restart the game over. It has to be, you have to switch your mindset of like, I'm starting fresh almost. Like, I might have these many followers, but not everyone is checking, you know? So it's a little bit of
Yeah, I feel
mixed
like
balance.
TikTok is a little weird in that regard, where views can be so volatile. Like, my views range from under 100 to, I have one video that has like 40,000, I think is the most. Not even book related, by the way.
Oh, funny.
So
Oh, that's so funny.
yeah, it was like a video game clip that I recorded a while ago, and I was like, this is funny, I should share it. But that's another
That's
thing. It's
hilarious.
TikTok is hard to, like any social media, it's just hard
Predict.
to predict what's gonna do well and what's not. So yeah, don't let it get you down.
Yeah,
A lot of people
definitely.
will talk about the 200 view jail. Personally, I'm happy if I hit 200, just because it's 200 people seeing my stuff. Even if it's some are my followers, it's usually a lot of new viewers, new eyes on it. So just be happy that people are seeing your content, because I think TikTok gives us a lot more exposure than you would get on other platforms. I can say from my experience
That's
with
great.
YouTube, it's hard to even get like your first view on YouTube, like really hard.
Yeah.
So yeah,
Even
it's
back in the day when I was making dumb, like, this is so embarrassing to say, so forgive me if I start to giggle uncontrollably. When I started like making homemade anime music videos on my like parents' family computer, I was like, I'm gonna become instantly famous. And this is back in the YouTube days of like 2008. Like, it is still vivid new. And I remember just being so disappointed I didn't pop off. So it's the same internet, it feels like yeah, that everyone's gonna watch your stuff. Yeah, YouTube's hard. Instagram is also hard. I made my separate writer Instagram because I just wasn't really getting all of my friends and family are extremely supportive, which I am so lucky. And I feel like you kind of have a similar experience. Like, everyone's just like rooting for you and so excited. But I felt like I was almost like shoving it at people who didn't really care. Not them, the friends and family, but like other acquaintances and just like people I've met throughout, you know, the 15 years I've had it or whatever. But I made the separate Instagram. And while a lot of people followed me from my personal, it's really, really hard. Like, I don't get very many likes at all on anything I post. And again, consistency is key. There's a lot missing that I'm not doing. But it can be really, really challenging on Instagram because it favors advertisements and it favors people who already have a following or who have a following that's like half bots. But just because they have that many people, it's going to get pushed to the top. So yeah, it can be really hard. I want to acknowledge that too for people who are starting out. It can be really discouraging at times and really challenging to like, you know, do anything. Yeah, people are mean on Instagram too.
Are
I
they really?
don't know why. Yeah,
I
and also
don't get it.
spam bots.
Yeah, I get
I mean,
those.
they're
I don't get the mean
all the
comments,
time, but
but I do get the fake bot account. The funniest one I get is a message for it. The name is always formatted the same, and it's a message that says, "I would like to help you sell your book." And I'm like, "That's great, but it's
Yes.
not out yet, so I don't know what you're gonna help me with." But
Also, are you real? Are you actually a real
oh yeah,
person? Blah, blah,
they're
blah,
not real. But
blah.
even if they were, I don't have anything to offer.
Yeah, right. I don't have anything for you. Yeah. So I guess the long short of it is that it's a challenge. And unless you're willing to make it your 24-hour job, which some people do, some people, you know, they are already self-published in some way or have chosen to just make that their career. And so it is their full, like, 9 days out of every day. It is just them pushing content and making content. So find your own balance and you're doing just fine. We are doing just fine.
I'll give one tip too on the consistency thing. Since you
Yeah.
can save drafts on most of these apps, just build up a library of drafts. That's what I do sometimes. I have like 30
Yeah.
memes in my drafts that if I don't know what to post, I'll just post one of those. And
Yeah.
it helps keep the algorithm happy that I'm posting.
And I know, like, that is a great tip. I forget that. I have, like, a bunch of stuff saved on, like, CapCut and then forget that it's there and then whatever. But another bonus, too, is that things like Instagram, I don't know, does TikTok, I don't think TikTok does scheduled content, but Instagram does scheduled content, apps like Canva, which everyone craps on Canva, but I was just about to say this, Mandy. Like, even if you do pay for Canva, I find it super useful for someone who is not a marketing person slash any good at social media or whatever. It can be a really useful tool, but they also have a social media scheduler, and it can
Oh,
be
very cool.
really helpful if you want to just spend a few hours making content and then just schedule it a week in advance schedule. And I know some people do that and they're a lot smarter than I am, but yeah,
I did not know Canva had a scheduler. That's really nice. I'm gonna have to use that.
yeah.
And yeah, in the as someone who does design work, I know a lot of people don't like Canva because they're like snobby and it's like, oh, that's for non-designers.
Of
But
course.
I mean, I use it especially for social media stuff. So
Yeah, I'm not, I don't do that. So it's really easy and helpful for me to do it. And it's very user-friendly and intuitive, and I still feel like I'd make it my own. Because, if you grew up on PowerPoint and stuff, it's pretty easy to be like, make this the background, add text. So it's very simple for us peons.
Very cool. It's under the apps on Canva. Okay, so if you didn't know where it was, like me, it's under apps on Canva. So social media scheduler. Sounds like another useful resource. We have a lot of resources in this episode, more than usual.
Me too. Agreed.
But yeah, those are our tips and strategies. I know it's kind of scatterbrained a little bit, but I feel like that's just the nature
Okay.
of social media. And you know,
Yes.
no one really knows what they're doing. I mean, some people do, but
Yeah.
it's a lot of just trial and error for me.
Yeah, I was gonna say maybe that can be one of our first guests we have on once we get like a decent enough not following, but when people are tuning in and we can add someone in, we have maybe we bring someone who's self-published and is just A plus at advertising their, their stuff and ask them a bunch of questions. I feel like that would be super helpful.
Yeah, I would definitely love to have more experienced guests on the show at some point. That would be awesome.
Hey, we're doing just fine, Brandon. What are you talking
I
about?
didn't it wasn't meant as a dig to at us,
No,
but
I'm just
I
kidding. Just giving you shit.
okay, well, speaking of social media strategy, I guess. We both have a work in progress, which I th believe is your gonna be your debut as well, right? Your debut novel. Okay. So, have you given any thought to publishing strategy, or is that not something you've really thought about and you're just focused on the writing right now? I know that's kind of a broad
Hi, Kat.
question.
It is a broad question, but I like it because I think this is like where most people who are in the self-published indie publishing space start. Like, what do you do? Where do you go? I'm a bit in the middle. I think where my goals are, and I know our goals are a little different. I think we talked about this last week when you were like, as long as my work gets out and people, like, even if it's just a few people read it, that's great. And if you can make it a career, even better. I think mine's a little bit more career oriented goal. Like, I think I would just want to, I want to be able to say, quit my 9-8-5 and, do this full time. However, I also concede that the publishing space is insane, and it is, oh, it's like the wild, wild west, even though it's been established for however long. My route is to start querying and go the trad publishing route. But if after a couple of years I find zero success in the time that I'm trying to query and get published, traditionally save up money so that when I do, I can very easily, spend the money I need to self-publish and to market. Now, publishing strategy in that vein, I haven't given much additional thought to. I think by the time the book is finished and ready to rock, it will be a very different internet. It'll be a very different app space and what's popular and what's not, whatever. There are so many unknowns that I can't really, I don't know. First I have to write the thing. But in after I write the thing, that's the kind of the split in the road. I'm weighing more towards trad publishing, even if it's a small local tradition, trad publishing house. I would actually kind of prefer that. I mean, I'm in it to make money in the long run, but I also acknowledge that like trad publishing comes with a lot of negatives. And so if there's like a local trad publishing house or at least a local agent, whatever, I have kind of that kind of a mindset.
That's
Yeah.
very cool. So sounds like I'm just going to summarize a little bit. Your approach is to
Sorry.
try. No, that's okay. Sounds like your approach is to try the trad route first, but you're open to self-publishing if it doesn't work out initially.
Yeah, it's like, yes, pretty much that. But while working towards trad publishing, very much become like a knower of all things self-publishing and that as well. Because I feel like that's also just a good thing to know and to be like with this podcast too, is to learn about and to help other self-publishers. So yes, trad first, but in while that's happening, background is self-publishing, and if it doesn't work out, I can easily then switch to self-publish, and it'd be like an easier transition than having to completely pivot.
It sounds really cool.
What about you?
So I think mine is, I guess it's the reverse. Like my plan is to start with self-publishing, but eventually I would like to work my way into trad publishing. I guess I'm thinking of I'm try when I was thinking of how I wanted to go, initially, did I want to try trad publishing or did I just want to go right into self-publishing? It was kind of my thought process was there's so many people pitching themselves to traditional publishers. And I'm sure you know even more about that than I do, having talked to agents at that pitch conference, and things like that. Like they have to be able to determine if a story is worth pursuing, like from the first page. And so naturally, there's just a lot of competition there. And I don't know if I feel comfortable competing in that space yet, or confident enough in my writing to do that yet. So I guess my strategy that I've settled on is I want to kind of build that confidence in my writing, make sure, people like it first, and then kind of use that to pitch myself to a traditional publisher at some point. Like the goal is obviously to build up a decent audience for my books. Like I said, obviously first and foremost for me is just if people enjoy it, that's all I care about. But I do want to, that doesn't mean I'm not going to try to build up the numbers and sell more books. So I think my approach is I'm going to start with self-publishing and hopefully find some success there. And then I don't know if this is going to work, but just when I pitch myself to a traditional publisher, I can be like, look, people do enjoy what I write, and I have, I can maybe guarantee this many sales because this is how much I get consistently, or something like that. Kind of
Yeah,
just
definitely.
thinking of it from like an investment mindset too. Like if I was, if someone was pitching something to me, but they didn't have, the background or the experience to back it up, I would be a little naturally a little hesitant. So I'll feel more comfortable going into it if I have that experience to bring, and like those sales numbers, those reviews and things like that.
No, definitely. I think so Mandy pointed something out as well, and I want to follow up with you on a point too. I think the control aspect of it is a really important piece, right? Mandy is saying, I'm afraid to do trad publishing because I'm afraid of big media having control of my story. It's not something a lot of authors are open about or talking about, is how much their original work changes. It's obvious it does change because edits happen and people are involved. But I think, like you were saying, like control, I mean, you didn't say that right, but that's what I'm inferring from your explanation, is that control is a big factor as to why people are going the self-publishing route more, right? Like they don't want people involved. They don't want executives saying yes or no to things. I think there was an example given at the conference I did go to, which was like the speaker said, I loved this cover more than the other cover they showed me, but they steamrolled me and went with the cover I hated instead because they said marketing wise this is going to sell more. So you do concede that in traditional publishing. Now that's where agents come in, right? Agents, if you get a good agent, a lot of authors trad published will acknowledge them in their acknowledgments and be like, without you, this story would not be able to exist in the way it exists, because agents are there to negotiate and they know the game better than any author does, even after decades of publishing. So I think that is the one really positive benefit of trad publish or self-publishing, is that kind of control and the ability to say, this is what I want. This is what I want to give to the people. And not to say that you can't get trad published afterwards, because like Olive E. Blake, Danielle Jensen, like they self-published and then big trad publishing houses came in and said, hey, you've gotten some good success here. Let's give it another go. So yeah.
Zach says he's interested to hear how both of these approaches or these different approaches go for both of us. Yeah, me too. I don't think there's any like right or wrong way. I think
Yeah.
there, I've seen so many different approaches. Eventually you just gotta pick one and hope it works. But yeah, curious to see how it goes. And Always
Yeah.
open
I
to.
also,
Sorry, go ahead.
sorry, Brandon, for always interrupting you. I
That's
feel like
okay.
I'm trying to work on that.
I feel like I interrupt you just as much, so it's fine.
Okay. We'll just continue to interrupt. I wanted to point out too before we, wrap this segment up and move on, that when I was at the conference again, someone asked, how much does my social media play when publishers, if you do choose to go the trad route, or even the self-published to eventually getting noticed by trad publishers, how much does your social media play in them hiring your story, essentially, and taking on your story? And he said, little to none. So you might have a huge following. And this is just one guy. It could be different from different perspectives, but one of the biggest takeaways I had from that was that regardless of how many followers you have, regardless of how good you do on social media, no one cares if the story itself isn't worth, noticing. So anyway.
That's interesting. I didn't really know that because I feel like I've heard different things on how much your social media presence matters. So it's nice to hear someone say that it's not all that important, I guess. Well,
Agreed.
that is our publishing topics. We have some interesting writing topics to go over. I don't know if so one of them's not really related to writing as much, but I still wanted to talk about it because we've mentioned it like at least twice in two separate episodes, and I wanted us to. We have to see if we can continue hosting this podcast together or if we need to go. I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
This is it, y'all. This is the final episode of Quill and Queer. No, I'm just kidding.
No,
Oh, that really makes me laugh.
yeah, no, absolutely not. I think disagreements are, healthy disagreements are fun and will make the show more interesting, but, so we got two writing topics today. Both, I think, we're going to come at from different perspectives, which is why I wanted to explore them. So first up, I think this one might be the shorter one, so we'll start with this one. Diversity and representation in storytelling. So I got two questions on this topic. One, how do you approach this in your writing? And then two, how do you prefer that it's approached in the books that you read? Or you can expand that to entertainment in general, like film and other media. Tackle it however you want.
Yeah, so I think we kind of touched on this a little bit last week with the content discussion about
Sensitive
writing from personal
topics.
experience. Yeah, sensitive topics. I approach these issues very warily. I think in my first draft, it's just getting on page, kind of, I don't. Of course, I am making sure that I am not outwardly offensive. I'm not even trying to be, but I it is in the back of my mind, making sure that if I do represent somebody with even a remotely equitable, equal here in real life, that I'm not doing it a disjustice, that I'm doing it well. It's hard. I don't know. I do find it a challenge because on one hand, if I'm very, very vulnerable here, and I feel like I hope no one yells at me or cancels me, but in the middle of everything, right, I don't want to overly diverse a story just for diversifying it if it's just coming from my own experiences and my own interests and then adding some flair to it because it is a fantasy, right? It's like a dark fantasy. I also don't want to be cliche, right? I don't want the Eastern territory of the neighboring kingdom being of East Asian influence. I don't want the Southern continent to be people with darker skin colors because that's usually where high fantasy tends to go, right? Reflects very similar experiences. So I don't want to be a cliche. I don't want to do it disjustice, but I also don't want to ignore it. I don't want all of the people or the creatures in my stories to just be like the same, overall. So it's a fine balance, one that I'm not sure I have like a concrete answer to or an ability to say like this is what you would do, or what not to do. But it also it is important, right? The one area that I do diversify and I approach in my writing more than I think topics of ethnicity, though that does come up, is sexuality. So that's something I'd play heavily in my novel. Both characters are very much of like the bisexual sort. Like they just don't, regardless of what the society says, they are just those types of people. So I really make sure that that is just not something that is shocking in the storyline. Like it is a norm, right? Regardless of like the religious implications from one character. So this is a really long-winded answer to your question.
No, that's
When I
okay.
read books that have diversity in it, especially written by a white person, I am immediately like, ooh, are we gonna do this right? Are we gonna do this well? Most of the time, it's okay, right? It's like obvious that the character is racially ambiguous, kind of like Leigh Bardugo kind of does that every now and then in her writing, so as not to ruffle any feathers. And so it's noticeable when I read, but when I write, I don't know how to handle it. I'm like, oh, no wonder. Like, no wonder these authors sometimes, especially white authors, just, yeah, not an excuse, not in any way, like, so it's, yeah, it's kind of complicated. I would
really
love to
is.
have someone on to talk about it because it's just kind of like, me as a white person, I don't know. I want to do it justice, but I also don't want to hurt anyone. I don't want to. So it's like, do I not have it in my story in a really intense way, or do I, and make sure that it like goes through the proper channels to make sure that it's done well. Anyway, ramble over.
No, that you get that was perfect. You gave just enough, detail and into your perspective. I thought we were going to be a little divided on this, not in a bad way, just I thought we were going to have different perspectives, but I think
Sure.
again we're pretty closely aligned in that I feel the same way. Like
Darn.
I don't worry if this doesn't divide us, the second topic might. But
Most definitely.
no, I think it really is a difficult thing to tackle. One, because I'm white too, so like I don't want to approach it. Like I want to handle it right, but I don't necessarily know what that means. Like, if I don't diversify my story enough, then there's criticism from that side. If I do it, but I maybe don't execute those characters too well, then there comes the other criticism, right? So it's like, well, I want to write diverse characters, ultimately to me, first and foremost, story and, just making sure the story is good and the characters are interesting is more important than what they look like. So I don't want to like get into the trap of having a checklist of representation that I, because I don't want it to feel like a checklist, not because I don't want my story to be diversified, but
Be diverse.
I don't want people to feel like, oh, that's the token, for this race. And like, I don't want to feel, because I feel like that's equally offensive to just not having the representation and being honest about like, this is just the story that I set out to tell. And also, I don't want to write about experiences that I personally don't have or like am not knowledgeable about. So there's, you won't see certain POVs in my book. Like, I'm not going to write someone who's so far removed from me that I can't do it justice. And
Yes, agreed.
that's just my approach. Like, because I feel like I could just as equally mess it up as if I had not touched it at all. And so
Yeah, no, I fully agree.
it's the same thing when I'm reading. Like, I'm mostly looking for, is the story good? Are the characters interesting? Does this feel like they're trying to just check boxes? Because there are some stories that feel like that, and not because I'm against diversity or anything, but I would rather if I guess I don't like that checklist feeling. Like, I don't like feeling like it's just there because they think it's easy marketing to minorities or something like that.
Agreed.
So it's definitely
And
a.
I think, yeah, go ahead.
Oh,
Finish your thought
sorry.
and I'll jump in.
I was just gonna
No,
say
you're good.
it's definitely a complex topic, and I don't think that like there's an easy answer to how to handle it. Ultimately, what I think I settle on is write the story that I want to write, when there's opportunities for representation, then explore them and see how they kind of develop. And if I'm happy with it, then I'll put it out and just hopefully I do it justice. And that, I think that's the best I can do. So.
No, full agreement there. I think where we, the checklist is a great example. You don't want to check boxes just to check boxes. I think that's when we are writing stories, and especially we're very much like, I know you and I, we have to keep kind of reminding people, we are fantasy writers and readers. I think, yeah, like Mandy said, I don't think there is winning. People might feel a certain way, but that's their experience, right? Like, you're not going to please everyone. That's like the
For
golden
sure.
rule. You're not, people are not going to like your book. But two, like, where we are fantasy readers, we notice the gaps in diversity of fantasy, especially back in the day. Now, not so much. There's a pretty good, new slew of female fantasy writers, but also people of color fantasy is kind of slowly becoming more prevalent, and I love that. Like, we have Lara Kwong, we have, she's like my favorite. But anyway, before I go into that whole line of thought, I want to say that that's when we, if we are not able to bring the diversity that is needed in the fantasy space in, we then uplift the people of color who are fantasy writers. We
Absolutely.
then share the space or give them the forefront space. And I don't think that's necessarily like talked about as an option as much. I'm just kind of like, okay, I might not be able to write all of these different perspectives because that's just not my lived experience, slash I don't want to do it just disjust I don't want to do it a disjustice, but here is a slew of other amazing writers who are doing that. So I think that's what I'm gonna just try and do, not force it, not checklist, but where I fail or where I don't have to be like, here, which we should be doing anyway. But yeah, that's just my follow-up. Hi, Peter.
Hey Peter, how's it going? No, I totally agree. I'm glad you brought that up because there are so many talented people that do come from these backgrounds that we want more representation of. And so naturally they're going to do a much better job exploring those cultures and those perspectives than I can, right? So, some that come to mind are like Evan Winter, the one you mentioned, Arif Kwong, and then so many others. Just like they do such a good job exploring that, that representation that it makes me like I don't want to do it because they did it. Like, go read that. And not in a bad way, just like
No, holy.
that's my like my gold standard for that, so.
No, agreed. I think it's, yeah, just go read better people than me. I've got my story, but if you want that's, yeah,
It's right
absolutely,
there.
because it's right there. Yeah.
And it is nice to see that it's becoming more prevalent than just the I'm trying to think of the right word, the Eastern or the Western European settings that we used to get all the time over and
Yes.
over.
100%. There's I have an advanced reader copy for a really amazing sounding fantasy that's coming out later this year, and I'm going to mispronounce her name, but by it, so the title of the book is She Who Knows, Fire Spitter, which I think is just such a cool title. By Nnedi Okorafor. Anyway, she is an award-winning author, and it's like set, well, it's not set in West African culture, but it is extremely very much, heavily influenced by West African culture. And it's like a coming of age story with like African futurist kind of vibe. So they're out there, and I think that's like the one thing that we got to do is just like, yeah, let's just, yeah, they're out there. That's my number one, like, they're there.
Yes, they are definitely out there. I think I need to. I'll definitely always happy to share my recommendations for if you're looking for more diverse fantasy.
Definitely.
Okay, now on to the make or break topic, Ash. This is
Here we go.
this
You ready to
is
fist fight?
yeah.
I'm so ready. Oh, here we go.
This is okay. If we don't have any disagreements here, I'm going to be very surprised, and I will concede that we probably just agree on everything for everything that we ever talk about in the future of this show.
Okay.
But we have talked about a certain author in the fantasy space. kind of a lesser known.
Say his name. Brandon.
Not a lot of people know who he is. He's an up and coming, you know, indie author. He only has a few books out. George R. R. Martin. George R. Sorry, Mandy. I was dragging that on a little too long. It's George R. R. Martin. but no. So the reason I wanted us to, I'm bringing him up, is because Ash and I have talked about George R. R. Martin and A Song of Ice and Fire a few times. We've touched on, you know, his legacy, his work, some potential criticisms, but we've never really had a chance to dive into it. And it was funny because after Ash, I think, had mentioned she had some criticisms about the man, I had said he was my favorite author. So we just put it down as a future topic to explore because, you know, we agree on a lot, and I think it would be fun to maybe discuss something that we possibly disagree on. So
totally.
I'm interrupting you. Yes.
Brandon, you give us first before we start this very collegiate, kind, and understanding debate between us.
Yes.
We are going to hear why he is your favorite, because I genuinely am interested and I want to respect the fact that he is your favorite. So
yes.
No harm or foul.
Okay.
Go for it.
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to say I know any criticism you have towards him isn't criticism of me, so don't feel like you have to soften it. But no, I.
Every time.
Yep. It's sorry, everyone, if you could hear that. It's the annoying TikTok thinks we're inactive for some reason, so I just have to like check a box that says I'm still awake. But yeah, so I believe it was episode 2 or 3 of the podcast that I kind of dove into my background with A Song of Ice and Fire and how it kind of reinvigorated my love of storytelling, because it helped me through a particularly dark and depressing time in my life. And I felt like nothing I was reading or watching could really just match what I was feeling until I discovered A Song of Ice and Fire. And so having that series that, you know, it is pretty well known for being pretty dark and bleak, it was kind of a weird cathartic moment for me because I had something that felt like it understood how I was feeling, and there were characters that were going through similar things. And I just really like George's prose and the way he writes characters. I think his world building is really good. You know, I could go on forever about why I like his writing. That said, I do know there are criticisms of the man, you know, the most obvious one being, you know, he is a famously slow writer, and then many others. So, but I don't want to take away from Ash's part of the discussion. So,
no, I asked you, I asked why he was your favorite. I think it's important to know the context of where we're starting off with this.
Yeah. And he's also been someone who's kind of helped me connect with like my brother. We were kind of going through a rough period in our relationship for a while, and we kind of used like a family book club just between the two of us to kind of reconnect a little bit.
That's
and
great.
It was really fun. Yeah, I got pretty much all of my siblings into A Song of Ice and Fire, so
that's amazing. I love that, family book clubs.
Yeah, I got to experience it with all of my brothers. Still working on the youngest one, but he's getting there. He's old enough, by the way. I realize how that sounded. He's old enough to experience A Song of Ice and Fire. I promise. He is an adult.
Age appropriate.
Yes. But yeah, again, it came at the right moment. I really like the themes he explores, and just a big fan of the man's work. But now it's your turn to tell me what your criticisms are, and I guess just what you think of him and his work altogether, because I don't want to like focus you too much down one path, because I'm sure you have a lot to say. But
no, that's okay. I always have a lot to say, Brandon. I will never stop talking. So for my own personal context and for everyone who's listening, I read I'll fight respectfully like a lady. No, so I picked up A Song of Ice and Fire in a old used bookstore in Suffolk, Virginia. This was back when I was in high school, so this is 2011, 2012 senior year.
Okay.
And this is, I loved it. I like loved it. The first one especially. Like I just it had been a while since I'd really fallen in love, like you said, like with just this very much very high fantasy that was a little bit, it's like not your dad's Lord of the Rings, right? It's very brutal, very cutthroat. And the mythos and the magic didn't really play such a heavy part in the storyline, but it was still enough in the background that you're like, okay, I'm intrigued. I want to see where this goes, especially with the lore around the White Walkers and Three-Eyed Ravens and all that kind of stuff. So I want to say I have read every single book, and the things that I love is that he is very good at spinning a tale. He can keep the vein of a story and have everyone doing their own thing, but then coming back to a major plot. And I think that's a very rare skill for people to have. Very few people can do it well, at least I should say, in a way that makes sense and doesn't feel convoluted. However, my main criticisms of his are one, I hate how he writes women, especially mothers. I think that's my biggest criticism. Two, I think he writes too much. I think that where I said he can then pull the plot in, there's too much fluff sometimes. The page boy who's bringing in his wine, who's in there for like a page and a half, doesn't, we don't need to know his lineage or how he's connected to the storyline. You know what I mean? Like there's no, I feel like sometimes he just throws it in to chunk it up and to make it more like high fantasy-esque. I mean, my God, I've seen the history of like Game of Thrones, and it's like the family trees are insane. Like it
They
takes
are.
a lot, right? But I don't think the reader needs to know this. This is very similar to the way I feel like Lord of the Rings, the Silmarillion. Like I don't, I've read the Silmarillion. Did I retain anything from the Silmarillion? No, I didn't, because it is a history textbook of Middle Earth. So I very much in that way, I'm like, I don't, is this important? And oftentimes I felt like it wasn't. So those are my two criticisms, those are my major criticisms. I feel like the women that he writes in particular are where I really have a strong feeling about. I feel like every character, even Dany, has to go through some tragic loss of child or miscarry or something. Or in Kat's perspective, all of her children, like for the most part, to be interesting at all. You either have to be fucking your brother, no offense, sorry, that was cussing, but you have to either have to be screwing your brother, you have to lose a child, you have to lose a child, lose a child. You know what I mean? It doesn't seem equitable in a way that I would expect a good writer to be nowadays. Granted, yes, he is old, as Mandy mentioned, but I just don't. That's why so many women don't like fantasy, I feel like, is because it's just always the same type of trope over and over and over again. And I think, to Mandy's point, isn't that the woman's struggle though? And I would want to push back on that a little bit, because not every woman wants to have a child, and not every woman is attached, in my opinion, this is again just my opinion, not every woman is attached to the concept of having a child, right? Like I'm kind of in that vein, like I don't, that's just not who I am. And so that's why I think Arya's character, as androgynous as she can be at times, is a great example of what he did well, of a young girl and eventually Sansa's arc, even though she had to go through some shit. Like those are two great examples of, I think, yeah, like having feminine struggles, being a woman in fantasy, but it not wholly absorbed by her womanhood, but it still played like such a strong trope that I was, at that time that I read it, already tired of. Like just very much tired of. So that's my main criticism. What I mean, we won't even touch on the show because I have so many gripes with the show, but those are my criticisms.
Well, I think you're with your main criticism, it's one that I've heard quite a bit, and it's one that I've always just not felt qualified to speak on just because I'm a man.
Yeah.
So when I read it, like when I read his his way of writing women, I see like I do see kind of both extremes that people bring up. Like there's some bad examples and then there's some really good ones. I think it's yeah. Sorry, did you wanna say
No.
that thought before
I
you
had
read it?
another one.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to say another one. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
But you finish your thought and then I'll go.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was just gonna say like that's one of the criticisms that I've heard that I've just kind of been like, okay, yeah, I can see how there might be some things here that to a female reader can be problematic, and I try to be conscious of those as I'm reading them too, because I can see it when someone brings it up, but sometimes initially I don't. As a man, I don't see it until it's pointed out to me, just
Yeah.
because I'm not coming at it from that
Totally.
perspective. And yeah, as Mandy said, I'm not. We won't touch on the show because the show did. I feel like the show did an even bigger disservice to women in some ways with certain scenes that just don't happen in the books, and were completely unnecessary. And then that's not to mention the other criticisms I have of the show. But anyway. So you had a thought. I want you to share that before you lose
I
it.
did.
But what was
Yeah,
it?
before I lose it, this was one of the reasons why my dad stopped at around like book four was that as much as I understand, and I'm going to touch on Mandy's comment about ye olde times, but it's kind of like I don't think anyone in here watches anime like I do or reads manga like I do, but it's a very similar concept of like when anyone of anything ever, and I'm experiencing this with other stuff right now, is that like there's so much negative and so much loss always constant that there's very little reprieve for the reader to breathe. And I think even with Dany and her ability to take over cities to become this amazingly powerful woman, right? The cost of that is still so high, and the decisions she's making are morally gray and sometimes damning. And it just, book after book, felt like I was just like, can we just have like one positive moment here? And it felt like there were so few of them, or that they weren't that important to the overall, like everyone's dying or dead or going to be dying and dead soon, that for me, it was just by book five, I was just really like, is there any benefit to reading this? Because there is no, even if you are a very much this is dark fantasy, which I'm a writer of dark fantasy, if you are a dark fantasy writer, you still gotta give the reader a bone every now and then. Like, here's some hope here. And if there is no hope, make that clear. But I don't think it's clear in his writing that there's just like, are we gonna have a jaunty moment, because you know the Red Wedding was supposed to be a really positive moment. We all know how that ended. It almost at the end of book five ended up being like, I was like, is this guy just like really into like suffering kink? Like, is that just like his thing? Like, he really likes just And Kat, you're right. I mean, it is grimdark kind of, but even in grimdark, I do feel like every now and then the reader gets thrown a bone. And final thought to Mandy's point about ye olde times. For a while, I felt that that was just like, oh yeah, it's based off of medieval stuff, but also it's fantasy, right? Like, we don't have to make it medieval Europe as much as we do. We don't have to keep using those tropes over and over again. And even in medieval times, we celebrated birthdays where no one was slaughtered. We celebrated, you know, the harvest and no one died. And so it's not sold as a grimdark, and it's not sold as like a book series that will just give you endless suffering. It's sold as a fantasy, and so you got to give us something. Anyway, the end. That's it.
Yeah, no, understandable. I think the tonal criticism just doesn't it doesn't bother me personally as much. I know for some people they do say like it just gets too depressing. I can't finish it. But I think Mandy's point right there is kind of just my thought. Like I think that he likes to focus on the darker side of things, whether that's good or bad for the reader, it's mental health.
Sure.
But no,
Yeah.
I can also totally understand how it might be too much at times for some people. So, I think my only response to that criticism is just, I understand that perspective. It just doesn't bother me. Because if I
Okay, let me pause it this to you.
yeah.
Oh no, you finish. You finish, because if
Okay.
you want what?
I was just gonna say, if I want, that bone, that good feeling, or to feel something other than complete depression and hopelessness, which I get when I read A Song of Ice and Fire sometimes, I will read something else as a break.
Sure.
And
Yeah.
I think Martin has said that specifically in response to that criticism. He's said like just that that's not what I write. If that's what you want, you're not going to find it in my books. And so that's just kind of how I look at it too, personally. But I understand. Like, I'm not saying it's an invalid criticism. It's totally valid
No.
perspective. And if it's not your style, I wouldn't subject yourself to it because it's probably going to make you miserable. But
Yeah.
yeah. So
So I want to posit a question at you then,
yeah.
because I know he has said that before. However, also, yes, Devilman Crybaby. I'm also talking about Jujutsu Kaisen. He has written himself into a hole, and no one is winning ever, at all times, at all, ever. And fans are like, what are we here for? So there are like equitable examples.
Yeah.
But I want to posit the question, because this is how, when I say my criticism, I mean I feel like this is a poor writing style,
Yeah.
right? It's not necessarily. He's like, well, this is just what I write. Sure, 100%. But do you think it's a cop out? I think that when you keep throwing tragedy and suffering onto
Yeah.
characters over and over again, even if they're experiencing different things at different times and different storylines in your novels, I think to continue to do that without having brevity of a moment
Yeah.
is, and also the whole goal of the storyline is to band together to defeat the White Walkers, correct? So I'm just asking, like, do you think it, like, at times it's kind of like, oh, it's easy to kill a character if it's just not fitting?
Yeah. No, I think that's a good question, and I think it's also one that's difficult to answer since the series is technically unfinished. So,
Yeah, true.
we can touch on that in a moment, but so yeah, I think that's another thing to consider is that like, okay, the story's not done yet, so there is still room for some good outcomes in some regard. Now he says ending is going to be bittersweet. What I've gathered from the show, it's definitely going to be bittersweet. It's not going to be a happy ending. But I think there's still room for good to come, and given that, winter has yet to come, it's going to come in The Winds of Winter, and then the last book is called A Dream of Spring. I think that's, I think we're going to be ending with some positive notes. I don't think it's going to be complete nihilism. Everything sucks. Everyone's dead. I think we will get some of that positivity. I just think it's definitely going to be near the end.
Sure.
And I think
Again.
it can be a cop out for in some instances where, someone, not this particular example, but I've seen similar things used to justify kind of circular plots that just keep doing the same thing without, anything different. So I think it definitely can end up that way. I don't think it's there yet, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's fair. No, again, I want to be clear, like, I read all of them, right? Like, so I wasn't just like, fuck this guy, I don't like him. I just think that, like, I understand why HBO picked it up. Like, HBO, known for their darker content. Like, when I see G.R.R. Martin, I know what I'm going to get. I don't want to say that I'm like wanting fairy tale endings. I actually, in my own writing, I'm very much like, there's very little hope. There is some hope. And I think maybe because of his writing style and the way there are so many characters and the plot lines divert, is that they're just, the concept of hope does get lost, right? Because, you're right, by the end of book five, we're not fully together. We've got Sam. I mean, the Sam and Gilly whole thing was super cute and super sweet, and I love that. That's like the one like nugget of hope that I have for everybody else. And so I'm not, when I say these criticisms, I want people to understand and know that I also know, like, I get it. He is G.R.R. Martin. I do think every now and then, though, there's an importance to bring back to the whole point of like, why are people doing these things? And the White Walkers and defeating them is essential. I think just sometimes I'm like, good Lord, another death. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, not all of them can be Kat. Not all of them can be brought back to life. So I have followed them for 60 chapters. And what did it get me?
Mm-hmm.
Every now and then, that's how I felt. I was just kind of like, motherfucker, motherfucker. It's like, keep killing people off. Like, why would I care when you bring a new character in? Why would I care? And I think sometimes that's how I felt. It's like, if you're just going to kill this guy off, I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
And so I often found myself like trying to skip and then be like, no, I have to read it because there's going to be something in here that I'm going to miss. Mm-hmm. So, anyway.
No, those are understandable, though. I think, so actually, before, we're getting close to the end here, but I do want to know your thoughts.
Sure.
I'm going to kind of stay away from them as much as I can, the man himself, but let's talk about the topic of leaving a work unfinished. What are your thoughts on that? Or taking decade plus between entries?
So I have one other person who has done this, and it is Patrick Rothfuss.
Yep.
And I loved A Wise Man's Fear. It was essential for me in high school. I was obsessed. My dad read it, and then he was like, I really think you like it. And so I read it and I consumed it. Even got my mom back into fantasy. Like, that's how good it is. Oh, wow. For people who haven't read. And for those who don't know, he is also a professor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we had, what was it? Wise Man's Fear and what's the second one? Do you remember? The King?
I know. Oh, God. There's
doesn't matter.
The Name of the Wind is one of them. I haven't read the series myself, but.
Wait, what have I been saying?
You said The Wise Man's Fear, I think.
Oh, that's the second one. That's what I'm thinking of. Yeah, okay. So Name of the Wind and then The Wise Man's Fear. Sorry, guys.
It's a two.
I loved The Wise Man's Fear, which is why it's like number one in my mind. It's like out of the two, my favorite. So Name of the Wind, Wise Man's Fear. I think it is rude and very mean to just stop. I mean, look. What is his name? The guy who wrote Dune. What's his name?
Dune.
Do you know offhand? Yeah.
Frank Herbert, I believe.
Frank Herbert. His son picked up the plot line, right? Mm-hmm. Like, his son picked up the plot line to continue the story. Discworld. Like, all of these other authors and series, I just don't think it's an excuse to stop. And I think you do a disservice to your fans, maybe a larger topic to discuss later on about how authors navigate that kind of landscape. But for Martin, how long has it been since he finished the fifth one?
It was 2011 for Dents, which was the fifth one. And then there was like a novella and then Fire and Blood in between. But as far as the mainline series, 2011. So it's been 13 years, I believe.
Yeah, I think that's just, and I, you know, I want to give artistic understanding. I want to give like, yeah, sometimes it can just be impossible to finish your work, knowing that Game of Thrones, the series, he was also writing for it and assisting and, you know, whatever. But for authors like Patrick Rothfuss, where like, yeah, you're teaching and that's all well and good. It's kind of just like, you've left these characters hanging and you've left everyone else hanging. And no one is asking you to pump them out like Sarah J. Maas or anyone else.
Yeah.
But like, at least be honest.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's my main crux of the issue, is that it always is like a roundabout way of being like, it's not quite finished yet. There's issues, whatever. And it's kind of like, okay, but are you just like bored with your story? Have you written yourself into a hole? Be honest about that, because so many authors experience the same thing. So that's how I feel.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I think, you know, for me, it's a case-by-case basis, depending on the author and the time that it's been. And then maybe we can dive a little deeper into it another time. But yeah, I think, you know, one, be honest with your audience. And that's not to say that I think either of them have been dishonest by any means. I think you can also get in the trap of, like, endlessly revising and saying that something is coming and that it's not. I feel like sometimes I kind of get in that mindset with my own work. Like, and I feel like that's why maybe it doesn't bother me as much. Like, yes, I want these next entries, but also as a fellow creative person, I understand kind of that endless cycle of wanting to perfect something and not feeling like it's ready. Obviously, if,
So,
yeah, sorry, go ahead.
no, I want to interject there before, you go on, because I do feel like what's very normal is that if you it happened with Samantha Shannon recently, where she like re-edited and re-put out the like a new version of her first novel of her series, The Bone Season. It's like, I don't, what is the threshold of like, it has been 13 years for both of them. I just looked it up, by the way,
Oh, okay.
between both Patrick Rothfuss and J.R.R. Martin. It's been 13 years. It's like, when is it, if you get stuck in a cycle of being like, this isn't ready, this isn't ready, this isn't ready, then is that how you felt about your other two also? And if it's not ready ever, when will it ever be ready? And also brings up another question of what are the publishing houses behind them doing and how are they handling it? And three, at what point do you go, here's what I have, and a future rewrite is on its way? You know what I mean? Like, does that lose its integrity? Do you lose your integrity? Do you feel like that as an author? All these questions, but I'm like, rewrites are usually a pretty common thing for people, like 5 years later after their book. I don't know. I just get really annoyed, as you can tell.
No, that's okay. It's totally understandable. I think that's a great question. Like, at what point do you just say, this is what I have? Because I feel like I was born at a weird time, because a lot of my favorite IPs are just kind of sitting, like books. There's video game series that have seen decades with no releases.
Are you talking about Elden or Elder Scrolls
Yes, that is one of them. The
or
last one came out when I was 12 years old, and I am more than twice that now. So yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I was born at a time to experience all the stories that I love, but now they're all just kind of like sitting. So yeah, it is a little frustrating as a fan sometimes of these things to not have those experiences. And I think I would just be, if these authors came out and said, like, I don't know if I can finish the story, but here's what I have. Or if they were just honest about, something like that, I feel like they'd probably face a lot of backlash. But personally, I feel like I'd be okay with that. And maybe just because I'm getting older, I don't have time to be angry about things as much as I used to, I guess. But I think, yeah, honesty is first and foremost important. Like, if you don't plan to finish it, just say so. But I think it's easy to get stuck in the trap of believing that you will finish it, even if it's been so long. But I think we can dive into, maybe we can have a deeper discussion
It's a
on
good
that
discussion for
topic.
next week.
Yeah. And yeah, Mandy, I'm probably gonna be pretty old by the time the next one comes out, but don't remind me, because the
I
Fallout
will.
show just came out, and it's gonna be like 15 years between Fallout games, and I don't want to think about that either. So
I've been liking the Fallout show. I never played it.
have you watched it?
I've seen enough lore on Tumblr growing up, and my partner Ross has played it. So we started it on Sunday. Also, I didn't realize it was coming out until like last week.
I think they released all the episodes at once too, which was nice. So you can just binge it if you want, but
And he's a cinematographer, he's a videographer, he's very particular about shows and
oh,
movies
okay.
and whatever. So we watched the first episode on Sunday, and no joke, Monday he was like, "Hey, can we watch more Fallout?" I was like, "Yeah." So it's really good. I like it a lot. Apparently it does a good job of balancing it out. But yes, time between projects is, I feel like there's an equal pressure between publishing to get stuff out. Also know your artistic limits. So yeah, maybe we can talk about that next week. That'd be good
Mandy, you've
topic.
spent a small fortune on special ed. New Vegas is my favorite one, for the record, everyone watching, by the way. But yeah, Fallout show is great if you haven't watched it. I know it's not book related,
It's
but
really good.
definitely check it out. It's an adaptation, so it's somewhat related, I guess. But we covered a lot of fun stuff today, even though it was a slow news week, Ash.
Very good. We
Thank
did.
you as always for hosting. We do have some people
Yeah.
with us, so I think we can open it up for questions and comments and feedback if anyone has anything to share. Now would not be the time to tell me that you couldn't hear me for the whole episode. Please tell me that sooner. But
Well, while we wait for comments to come in, because hopefully some people have some, or if not at all, we did not check in, work in progress check-ins. Did you do that on
That's
purpose, or
true.
did you
No,
see?
I didn't. I think I scrolled too fast in the doc. Do you want to do that real quick?
Okay.
Do you want to do a work in progress
Yeah, you
check-in?
go for it. You let us know with your new, you got a new rhythm going, it sounds like.
I have a new routine going. I'm getting some reading
Good.
and writing done every morning. Word counts are still pretty low, but I'm getting words out, which is more
Okay.
than I can say for a few weeks ago. So I'm sitting with my story more. I just feel more in the writing zone. And
Good.
so, yeah, the routine is definitely helping. Having that dedicated writing time in the morning is definitely helping. And
Good.
I think, it's just going to be a slow and steady improvement on my side. And working right now, I'm trying to focus on the Blades for Hire story. So that'll be coming first, obviously. But that's
Yeah,
my
trying to focus on that too.
slow but steady update.
Good.
What
Well,
about
I have
you?
taken inspiration from you, and I have really tried in the last few days, since at least we talked last week, to put pen to paper or fingers to keyboard. And I have gotten some words in. I feel better than I did a couple weeks ago, which is great. Not as much progress as I would want, hence the I'm going to be delayed with my short story for the anthology. Therein lies the whole conundrum of is this story worth telling and imposter syndrome, whatever. But yeah, I am having some progress. I've had at least like 1,000 words written since last week, for each story, for the book and for the short story. So
Very nice.
small improvements, we'll take them. Mandy, I heard that publishers are desperate and looking for large social followings. Do you think that? And it's why we have more others getting. Ooh. Also, do you think
That's a good
finding a good
question.
agent is make or break? Excellent questions.
I wasn't
I
expecting
think,
these kind of questions, but they are great questions.
yeah, they are great questions. Well, we will absolutely do our research between this week and now. This will be probably our top of the list
Yeah, actually,
discussion to
I'm going to
next week.
save these questions because I think they warrant a
Yeah.
little more research before I speak with any authority on the subject, but
Yeah, I'm gonna type them out too. Thank you for your questions, Mandy. I really appreciate it.
okay, I can get them saved, but yeah, we will get back to you on those because I don't have an answer right now.
Yeah. Well, I think that's usually like why we're gonna ask at the end so that we have good discussions for next week. Yeah, those are really interesting, especially the agent discussion. I'm excited to dive into that next week or going forward.
Well, we landed right at our 90 minutes again. I think we do a good job of that. I'm not even usually
You.
watching the clock, but it always ends around the same time. So, do you have
It
any
does.
closing thoughts you want to share with anyone before we sign off?
No closing thoughts, just all my positivity to everybody who's writing out there. It's a tough world with work and balancing everything else, and we're doing the best we can. And we'll see you next week.
Great words of positivity. I'm not even going to try to follow them up because my Tuesday brain is so dead right now.
You're too kind to me. You're too kind to me, Brandon.
Well, thanks for being my co-host, Ash, and I think I will see you next week, but if not, we will let everybody know. All
Sounds good. Bye, everybody.
right.